So, my other task, which is really fun, is to be able to introduce our speaker for today. He won't be speaking for a little bit yet, but I'll try to build some anticipation by telling you that Ryan Cargill is a longtime friend of mine. We worked together at Harvest House for a lot of years in a galaxy far, far away. And he's a real student of the Bible. He's taught the Bible kind of at all levels before. He preaches often at churches, and he is also somebody with a really profound interest in science and nature. And I love the way he combines the two. He's working on a writing project right now that is kind of about that intersectionality of faith and creativity and nature and philosophy and the spiritual life. So I'm anxious to hear what he has to say today, which may not have anything to do with any of those things. But I, at least a little bit, okay. But I know it'll be good, and when it comes time, give a warm welcome to Ryan Cargill, and that's it for me.
Thanks for having me today. We came down from Salem this morning, but I attended every school on Bailey Hill Road. I went to Bailey Hill Elementary before they closed it, then I went to Kennedy Middle School, and then I went to Churchill High School, class of 89, go Lancers. And I took one class at Eugene Bible College when it was still around, and then I got a D. And that is the sum of my Bible college experience. It's fun to be here and be the teacher just one time. I did the math, and I figured that I had spent 20,000 hours being taught on this road. Today, I get to be the teacher. And I promise it won't go 20,000 hours, probably no more than two or three. Does anyone here like reading? Terry and Carolyn, have you ever read a book? If you read novels or biographies, you're familiar with something called the developing character or the dynamic character. This can be the main person in the story. Not necessarily. The dynamic character is the person who changes over the course of the plot. They show up periodically, we get to check in on them, and through them we get a picture of the entire story. Examples. Gimli the dwarf in Lord of the Rings. He starts out as a dwarf isolationist, he hates elves, and then through struggle he becomes friends with Legolas the elf, he swears allegiance to an elf queen, he comes to love elves so much that they allow him to spend eternity in the elf version of heaven. That's a change. Star-Lord, Peter Quill from Guardians of the Galaxy. Start the story as an orphan, then he's kidnapped by aliens, then he grows up to be a thief, and then he's a hero, and then he saves the universe. Ebenezer Scrooge, Falstaff, and Merry Wives of Windsor, Neville Longbottom. Most great stories have a dynamic character whose life and person changes as the story develops. Today we're going to talk about the dynamic character in the book of John, and his name is Nicodemus. I was really excited that somebody was going to start teaching John, because When you're visiting as a speaker, you worry a little bit like, oh man, did somebody just last week teach this same thing? But you kind of get over it, because if it's a different person, they've got a different view on it, they'll tell you completely different things. So it's okay. It's really cool that you're going to be getting into John, and you'll hit Nicodemus pretty soon. Now John, let's talk about John just a little bit. He is a fan of the small story. He's the kind of guy who covers major political events in a couple of verses, and he'll leave kings completely out of the narrative, but then he'll spend five chapters talking about one dinner party that he had with his buddies. John was an old man writing about his friends, and he usually wrote the small story. Before we meet Nicodemus, let's talk about what's happened so far in this small story. John 2, Jesus did his first miracle, turned the water into wine. He didn't think it was time to break out his message yet. His mom Mary says, oh yes it is, and he does the miracle. So the cat's out of the bag, it's time. He leaves Nazareth, and he's doing miracles, and he's teaching in Jerusalem. And he gets noticed by religious leaders. And then John 3 starts, and Nicodemus has questions. See the first slide, please. Next one. This is a painting called Jesus and Nicodemus by Kieran Hendricks Vollmeren. Pardon my pronunciation. He's Dutch. I'm Dutch, but I don't speak Dutch. He lived from 1601 to 1645. Nicodemus has on, if you'll see, 17th century European clothes, which is not something Nicodemus had. He probably did have the turban. That's probably accurate. Artists often show Jesus and Nicodemus hunched over a table with candles, with books. It's like it's some kind of secret study group or a tutoring session. It could just as easily have taken place in a garden or around a campfire. Jesus spent a lot of nights outside having visions and being arrested. John 3 doesn't give us the place where this happened. It just tells us about the person. Well, who is Nicodemus? He doesn't appear in any other biblical record. There is something called the Gospel of Nicodemus, which you can read online if you want to, but it seems to have been written centuries after Nicodemus died. So probably a fictionalized story about Nicodemus. It's not actually written by him. For practical purposes, John is our only source. And Nicodemus shows up in chapter 3, chapter 7, and chapter 19. Every time we see Nicodemus, it's in a private meeting. So if it's private, how does John know about them? John probably got the information from Nicodemus. They were probably friends, eventually. And here's what John says about him. It's 27 AD, John 3:1. Now there was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. So what's the first identifier? There was a man. It was so long ago, and the Bible's very good at using parables and allegories to tell its message. It's easy for me to think about all the stories in the Bible this way, as though everything's a flannel graph. You have the little things on the felt background, and oh, this is a nice story, and then you're done, and you move away from it. I have to remind myself that some stories in the Bible are real people with real lives. There are 8 billion people on the world right now. Did you know that 115 billion people have lived on Earth? That means 107 billion people played, sang, told stories, had spouses, had children, had jobs, had unique ways of seeing things, and then they died before we were here. They were as real as we are. And I have to remind myself when I'm going through these stories that this was a person who was real. You remember Kieran Vollmeren dressed Nicodemus in clothes proper for his own time? He was making Nicodemus real. He was like me. So let's start by saying this story is not a parable. In Nicodemus' story, there was a man, anthropos. Nicodemus was real. And this is important to me personally because as much as I love the parables and the apocalyptic visions, I find biblical stories that change me are the ones about regular, real people like me, like myself. What's the next thing it says? There's a man of the Pharisees, Pharisaos. Let me do this. Okay. Getting old is dumb. Okay. What is a Pharisee? Most of the Pharisees we see in the Bible are in some kind of leadership. And they're almost always the bad guy in the story. And that's not really fair. It's not fair, you see. I know, it's terrible. Pharisees were just a combined religious order and a political party. They weren't automatically evil. They weren't the Joker, they weren't the Penguin, they were just people with opinions. It's like saying a Democratic Methodist, political party and a religious group. Pharisaos means separatist. The Sadducees were elitist, they were priests of privilege, they were open to be a part of the empire for the sake of the power that they gained. A Pharisee wanted the Jews to be culturally separate from the Romans. Even if they had to live with them, they wanted to be separate, Pharisaos, the separatists. Pharisees are more popular with the commoners at this time, the rabble. There were about 70,000 people in Jerusalem at the time this story took place, and about 7,000 of them were Pharisees. So it wasn't like this tiny group that controlled things, it was just a group of a type of person. Nicodemus was a Pharisee, a separatist. What's the next thing it says? There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus. Now, Nicodemus means victorious among his people, or triumph of the public. This is Eugene. We know what Nike means. Nike means victory, right? It's the same root. Nicodemus, Nike, it's the same root, victory. Now, I don't know if this is the name his parents gave him. A lot of times in the Bible, someone will get a name because of the life they lived. Maybe it's a name he earned later. Could have been either, but it's fitting for a Pharisee. He's a blue-collar separatist. These people, our people, will be victorious. Nicodemus. What's the next thing? There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a member of the Jewish ruling council. Probably what that means is Nicodemus was one of the Sanhedrin of the Sanhedrin. Those who sit together. Show me the next slide. The Sanhedrin were 23 men who acted as criminal judges, and they settled religious disputes, and they helped run politics in every Israelite city. Nicodemus was, show me the next slide, a man with a real life, a family, and a job. He was a Pharisee. He was a separatist. He was respected and trusted enough to sit with the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court, basically. But even though he had authority, he was a champion of the commoners. You ever experience this? You're doing what you think you're supposed to do with your life. You're following the cultural rules for success. You've got the right job. You've got, you're going to the right church. You have the right friends. And then you look up one day and you realize, this is not working for me. This doesn't feel like, you know, maybe things are technically working out, but you feel like something should be different. Something needs to change for me. And you get jumpy. Nicodemus was established. He had solid views on politics. He had solid views on religion, and he had solid views on how the culture should be run. And then he hears rumors coming from the market, and he starts to wonder. And Jesus is about to wreck Nicodemus's established existence. My wife, Angela, is an engineer with the Department of Transportation. She has 30 years working in traffic safety. And something she will say to me pretty often is the public thinks a thing will make them safe, and it will do the exact opposite. She hears a lot of requests for crosswalks. Show me the next slide. Dear Mrs. Cargill, I want to walk across the freeway from my house to the Costco. Can I have a crosswalk here? No, don't walk across the freeway to the Costco from your house. That's a terrible idea. And there's a perception problem. We lay people, we non-traffic engineers, start thinking of crosswalk lines on the ground as force fields. If I stay in these lines, no one's going to hit me. This is a safe place to cross. But lines don't give you safety if the driver doesn't, first of all, see them and then decide to stop. Nicodemus believed his path was laid out. He knew the politics of the path. He knew the theology. He knew the rules, the safety of the path. And then he hears Jesus and he realizes his crosswalk is just lines painted on the ground. Jesus isn't stopping. Nicodemus' his well-defined life isn't going to keep him safe. So what does he do? John 3:2. He came to Jesus at night and said, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God, for no one could perform the signs you are doing if God were not with him. Show me the next slide. This is Christus und Nicodemus by Fritz von Uda. Again, sorry for the pronunciation. I'm also German, but I don't speak German. This was painted in 1886. Fritz von Uda left the military and went into painting. He basically was Bob Ross. Jesus always seemed to be dressed like the familiar Jesus that we see in all the paintings. And then, again, we see Nicodemus is in clothes that matched the artist's nationality and time period. He's in a professor's robe. He's got a collared shirt and tie. If you look really close, he looks like Sigmund Freud. And that's, I'm not trying to mock him for that. If we show Nicodemus as a regular person and it helps someone to remember that he was a regular person, that's what we're trying to do, right? So we show Nicodemus that way. So why come to Jesus at night? Was Nicodemus too busy? Did he have a date? It's more likely he came at night for exactly the reason that you think he came at night. He didn't want to be seen. He wanted to clear a few things up before he mentioned Jesus in any official capacity. Rabbi, we know you are a teacher who has come from God. Well, who's we? Did all 7,000 Pharisees send Nicodemus to ask the question? Did 23 members of the Sanhedrin put out a subpoena? We're going to find out what's going on. I think Nicodemus is using the royal we. He's meaning me. I know this one thing is true. Jesus has a habit of giving cryptic answers to people's questions, and here he gives Nicodemus probably the most maddening answer ever given. Jesus replied, this is verse 3, "Very truly I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God unless they are born again." And remember, we have the rest of the New Testament. We have 2,000 years of interpretation in our pockets. We know things Nicodemus does not. We understand that being born again is a metaphor. You hear about Jesus. You read the things he said. You believe they are true, and you change. You become a new person because believing those things changes you. You're not just a physical person anymore. You're a spiritual person. Nicodemus doesn't know any of that. He's just told, you need to be born again. John 3:4, "How can someone be born when they are old?" Nicodemus asked. "Surely they cannot enter a second time into their mother's womb to be born. What are you talking about?" Now, questions don't make God mad. It's not wrong that Nicodemus is asking questions here. Half of the Psalms are poems full of questions and complaints. Jesus' teachings are often just him responding to questions. And then he made those questioners into the founders of the church. So if you don't understand, ask. Asking is okay. James 1:5, "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. Ask." Now, these answers can challenge your thinking. The answers can be cryptic. You won't fully understand right away, but ask your questions. And Nicodemus asked questions. Jesus was not afraid of any of them. John 3:5-7, Jesus answered, "Truly I tell you, no one can enter the kingdom of God unless they are born of water and the Spirit. Flesh gives birth to flesh, but the Spirit gives birth to spirit. You should not be surprised at my saying, you must be born again." Now, this is a little clearer. He's making it a little bit clearer for Nicodemus, right? It's a fuller explanation of what being born again means. And Nicodemus is probably starting to track with him. And then John 3:8 happens. "The wind blows wherever it pleases. You hear its sound, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it is going. So it is with everyone born of the Spirit." You can picture Nicodemus rubbing his temples and thinking, why did I even ask these questions? I'm wasting my time. Jesus isn't making it easy on him. Remember, this is the Iron Age. People don't know where wind comes from. They don't know what causes wind. Does anyone watch the Weather Channel? I love the Weather Channel. I don't know why it's so fascinating to see whether it's raining in Tennessee or not, but I like seeing it. You get a severe weather warning pop up on your TV or your radio. You prepare for wind if it's coming. You know where the wind is coming from because you can see it in the satellite. It's coming from over there, right? We know what causes wind now. Rising and falling air masses, the sun, the water, the land acting on atmosphere. Our forecasts are available weeks ahead of time. First century Israelites could see clouds, but that's not much better than Winnie the Pooh at predicting weather, right? Tut, tut, looks like rain. That's as far as it went. This metaphor of the wind depends on mystery. But we've learned away the mystery. For us, we know where the wind comes from. That part of it's not a mystery. But for people then, the atmosphere was like magic. They didn't know what air was made of, let alone what made it move. And it's the same way with the Spirit of God. Now, wind we've figured out, but for us, the mystery of the Spirit has not stopped being a mystery. We have not learned away that part yet. This is still important to us. Remember when we said that about Nicodemus and his crosswalk life, his well-ordered crosswalk life? Jesus told Nicodemus that if he wanted to see the kingdom, he needed to follow the mysteries. He needed to leave the lines. You cannot tell where it comes from or where it is going. So it is with everyone born of the Spirit. Show me the next slide. This is a painting by Jesus Maffa. This is a modern painting. It's from Cameroon. And again, Jesus kind of looks like Jesus in his red robe, but the artist is making Nicodemus like himself. He's making him real. I was not that diligent of a student in school. I did okay, but I was terrible at studying. But I was really, really good at taking tests. Oh, I was so good at taking tests. It was my favorite thing. If you could figure out what the test giver wanted, you could figure out multiple choice. You could figure out what kind of essay to write. You could really do well on it if you could just figure out what they wanted. I took my AP tests in this building, in those classrooms right over there. When I took my AP biology test down the hall, I was told that I needed to write an essay about Gregor Mendel. I don't know if you've ever heard of who Gregor Mendel is. He's the father of genetics. And what he studied was pea plants, the colors of their flowers. When you had a red flower and a white flower plant and you bred them, did they make a pink flower, a red flower, a white flower? And they did all three, it turns out. And he figured out heritability is what it was about. How are things inherited from parent organisms? I could not remember for the life of me what Mendel did. No idea. I thought maybe it was about mice. And so without mentioning peas or mice, I wrote a very well-organized essay about what a great guy Gregor Mendel was. And I passed the test. I got college credit for that. Now here's a shocker. Taking tests without knowledge does not serve you well in college. So I dropped out of college after my sophomore year. 20 years later, I went back. I studied like crazy. I graduated. My degree depended on knowing who Gregor Mendel is. I know about Gregor Mendel and his peas now. There's a difference between a person who wants to look smart and a person who actually wants understanding. The person who wants the real thing keeps asking the questions. Now, Nicodemus could have heard Jesus' metaphor about the wind. Where does it come from? Where does it go? And he could have made himself look smart. He could have said, "Ah, yes, the wind," and nodded knowingly. Instead, John 3:9 says, "How can this be?" He wants to understand. He wants to go one step further and actually know what he's talking about. Now, John 3:10 to 11, "You are Israel's teacher," said Jesus, "and you do not understand these things. Very truly, I tell you, we speak of what we know, and we testify to what we have seen, but still, you people do not accept our testimony." Teacher, didaskalos, show me the next slide. That's another label for Nicodemus. He's a teacher. Now, Jesus, again, isn't thrown by questions. He's pointing out that Nicodemus, despite all his training, all his roles and leadership that he's had, he's still missing very basic information. You're Israel's teacher, and you do not understand. But because Nicodemus keeps asking, Jesus keeps answering. He's moving him forward. He explains that he will be crucified in verse 14, that'll be lifted up in the desert. He explains why God sent him in verse 16. He explains the dividing point between pretend safety and real safety. And it's believing in his words in verse 17 and 18. And then verse 19, this is the verdict. Remember, Nicodemus was a judge. He was one of the Sanhedrin. He judged criminal cases even. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. And remember, what time did Nicodemus come to see Jesus? Nighttime. I can see him looking at the sky, saying, "Those who come in darkness." Show me another slide. This is a painting by Henry Asawa Tanner. It was painted in 1899. This is an African-American painter. His mother escaped slavery via the Underground Railroad, and he studied art in Paris. This is a study for a more detailed painting that he did later, but I actually like this one more than the final. The faces are unclear because he was just doing a sketch, but he uses the tradition of painting religious heroes with a halo. Jesus has one. And you notice Nicodemus doesn't have a halo yet. He's still trying to figure it out, still trying to learn. And I like in this painting how Jesus' halo doubles as the moon. He came at night. Nighttime. Light has come into the world, but people love darkness instead of light. He's like, looking at the black sky as he's talking. Whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. Nicodemus, next time, come openly. You don't have to hide when you come to ask me questions. Don't hide the fact that you're looking for answers. Go ahead and ask. And Nicodemus does just that. He shows up again in John's book. Now this is 29 AD. This is 2 years later. John 7. Let's recap what's happened in the intervening four chapters. Jesus starts in Cana in the north, and he turns water into wine at the wedding. He goes south to Jerusalem, and he clears the money changers out of the temple with a whip, and here he meets Nicodemus. And he goes north to Galilee, and he passes through Samaria, and meets the woman at the well. He heals the official's son. Then he goes south to Jerusalem, and he heals a man into the Bethesda pool, gets in trouble for healing on the Sabbath. And he goes north to Galilee and he feeds the 5,000 and he walks on the water. And then he goes south to Jerusalem for the Feast of the Tabernacles. North and south and north and south. It's like Jesus is pacing the length of the country. He's gearing himself up for something. He's already had threats on his life. He could have stayed in Galilee and been pretty safe, but Jerusalem needed him. And Jesus shows up in Jerusalem and the chief priests hear about it and they send the guards to grab him. This is John 7, 45 to 49. Finally, the temple guards went back to the chief priests and the Pharisees, who asked them, "Why didn't you bring him in? No one ever spoke the way this man does," the guards replied. Just his words stopped them. "You mean he has deceived you also?" the Pharisees retorted. "Have any of the rulers of the Pharisees believed in him? No! But this mob knows nothing of the law. There's a curse on them." And what did the chief priests ask? "Have any of the rulers of the Pharisees believed in him?" "No. We know somebody who's one of the rulers of the Pharisees." They got it wrong. At least one ruler and Pharisee believed, or he was trying. Nicodemus, verse 50, who had gone to Jesus earlier and who was one of their own number, asked, "Does our law condemn a man without first hearing him to find out what he has been doing?" They replied, "Are you from Galilee too? Look into it and you'll find that a prophet does not come out of Galilee." Nicodemus is the dynamic character. He's changing. He's no longer questioning Jesus at night in secret rooms. Now he's questioning his colleagues in an official meeting. He's reminding his friends about their dedication to justice. His friends ask questions, but they answer the questions themselves in the way they want the question answered. "Has anyone of the rulers of the Pharisees believed?" "No." They answer the way they want it answered. But Nicodemus asks, and then he waits for the answer. 30 AD, this is John 19. Jesus stays around Jerusalem. He's escalating his miracles. He's escalating his teaching. He's escalating the conflict, really. Eventually, he's killed for his trouble. This is John 19:38. Later, Joseph of Arimathea asked Pilate for the body of Jesus. Now, Joseph was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly, because he feared the Jewish leaders. With Pilate's permission, he came and took the body away. He was accompanied by Nicodemus, the man who earlier had visited Jesus at night. Nicodemus brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds. Taking Jesus' body, the two of them wrapped it with the spices in strips of linen. This was in accordance with the Jewish burial customs. Show me the next slide. This is Michelangelo's Lamentation over the Dead Christ. This was probably carved between 1547 and 1555. The hooded man on top is assumed to be Nicodemus. And Michelangelo went all in on this one. Nicodemus is a self-portrait. Nicodemus is like me. He's real. The Sanhedrin judged Jesus, and then Nicodemus buried him expensively and with care. Now the key is, Nicodemus didn't know about Easter. Right? He's actively honoring this person that his cohorts condemned, and he's honoring him in front of the Roman guards who killed him. And he has no reason to expect anything good to come of it. He's not safe in the lines anymore. He's somewhere new. He doesn't know where the wind's blowing. He doesn't know the next step. He just knows he needs to bury Jesus and he needs to do it right.
to in the next slide.
This is a stained glass window in Old Hunstatton St. Mary Church in Norfolk, England. Now you can see the two Marys and Joseph of Arimathea is on the left, and then Nicodemus, they're all burying Jesus. And if you look real close, Nicodemus has a halo. The dynamic character grew. He finally deserved one. So what does this mean to us? Well, first of all, be the dynamic character. Choose to be that person. You might not be the main character in the world, but you're still a character. You're still here. You can be the dynamic one. Allow yourselves to change as you learn, even if you're the only one who changes. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever, but guess what? You are not. You grow and you progress. And we don't actually earn and lose halos. That's not how it works. That's just a metaphor that artists use. We change as we learn. Second of all, ask questions and then ask again. God doesn't fear questions. The gospel isn't endangered by questions. If you don't understand, keep challenging, keep asking. Ask a friend, ask the Bible, ask a book, ask online. You know, of course, use discernment and determine, you know, if what people are telling you is good or is not good, but ask those questions. Just because you believed something at one time doesn't mean you're stuck. You can change the things that you believe, because you very well could have been wrong. Or you could have been obsessing about something that's very minor or ignoring something that's incredibly important. Third, you will be moved in ways that you don't expect, so let the wind take you. The wind blows where it pleases. The Spirit of God goes where it pleases. However set you believe your life to be, however steady, when the Spirit says move, what's the saying? When the Spirit says move, you've got to move. Fourth, be honest about who you are. Now, Jesus told Nicodemus that the life of a spiritual person is unpredictable, but he didn't criticize Nicodemus for being who he was. Jesus talked to him as he was. He answered his questions in ways that made him think. Jesus is a teacher and a master, and it was okay to be that. Jesus called Nicodemus to new things, and he will call you to new things, but Jesus started with Nicodemus where he was, and he'll start where you are. You don't have to be fixed first. It's okay to start right here. Thanks for listening.